Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. If you're looking to install some new windows or a new door in your home, a great place to start with Pella is their showroom. It actually helps to see the windows and see the doors, open them, close them, to get a better feel for exactly what you're installing in your home. The showrooms are really, really cool. They got showrooms in Omaha and in Lincoln, so check them out. Or check Pella out online at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. You know, everyone's looking for ways to spice up your next party. Well, if you're looking to take a party to the next level, I got the answer for you. The Runza Party Pack. The Runza Party Pack includes, wait for it, a dozen mini Runza sandwiches, 50 mini corn dogs, and a 20-piece chicken strip with your choice of dipping sauce. Now that's a party I want to be at right there. Head to runza.com/partypack for more information today. Runza makes it all better. Okay, we have another great podcast on deck for you, and it's because we got a great guest again. Ryan Miller, Creighton's new assistant basketball coach, is on the pod today. He was just hired from TCU. And where he was an assistant coach for Jamie Dixon, really kind of reinvigorated TCU, got them to where they were a really good program in the Big 12. And you look at Ryan Miller, he's got a really interesting basketball background and journey. His younger brother is Mike Miller. Everybody knows who Mike Miller is, NBA champ with the Miami Heat, a great NBA player, was a superstar at Florida. And Ryan Miller's nephew is Mason Miller, who is in Creighton's 2021 recruiting class. He'll be on the team next year, a 6'9 forward, really talented player. So Ryan Miller will be coaching his nephew Mason Miller at Creighton, which is obviously a really cool story and a really cool connection. But man, Ryan Miller's track record in college basketball is impressive. He was on staff for John Calipari at Memphis. That's where he got his start, but he's then been at Pepperdine, then at New Mexico under Steve Alford, then at Auburn, then UNLV, and then TCU, and now Creighton. So he's really been all over the country, and he has a reputation as an excellent recruiter. So Jays fans should be really excited about Ryan Miller on the staff. And I recorded this chat with Ryan on Thursday, May 6th. It was a really, really good conversation. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this a lot. So let's get to it. Here's my podcast chat with Creighton's newest assistant coach, Ryan Miller. Enjoy. On the line now, Ryan Miller, newest addition to the Creighton basketball coaching staff. First of all, Ryan, congratulations. Welcome to Creighton, my man.
Well, I appreciate that, Nick. Thanks for having me on, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, you know, I was reading about you, and I got to assume, and it's got to be pretty exciting for your nephew, Mason Miller, who's an incoming freshman at Creighton. I got to assume that Mason being at Creighton played a role in your desire to come to Omaha, but lay it all out. What was it about the opportunity at Creighton that appealed to you?
You know, Coach Mack and the system and the staff here have done an unbelievable job of making Creighton a powerhouse in the Big East and in the country. And their style of play, getting up and down the court, the transition offense, Coach Max and their assistants' abilities to teach an NBA style of basketball, which is very intriguing to recruit to. And then obviously there's family involved. My mom and dad live in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is about 2.5-3 hour drive from here, and Mason coming here. So a little bit of it was a family decision, yeah, to be part of his development and be closer to mom and dad.
Yeah. You know, tell me about your relationship with Mason, because like, were you the cool uncle growing up? Like, is that what you've been your whole life or what?
No, I think had a pretty cool dad who was playing in the NBA. So I was just the assistant coach at some college.
That's it.
But no, I think he had a bunch of guys that kind of adopted him as he's growing up, guys like Kyrie Irving and LeBron James.
Yeah.
So I was way down the list of cool people that he was.
Well, here's when LeBron starts coming around, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I go way down the list. I go, that's just my uncle over there. Who's that in the corner? That's just my uncle.
Unfortunately, that's what happens.
No question.
Tell me about Mike growing up quick before we really dive into you, because, you know, obviously you look at Mike. I mean, he's an NBA champion, had a really good NBA career, mm-hmm. great player at Florida. Like, when did you first say, oh, man, like, there's good, and then there's like, this dude's got a chance NBA. To play in the league good. When was it?
Well, league good, you know, coming from a small town in Mitchell, South Dakota, 14,000 people in the middle of nowhere, really. But, you know, league good, I didn't really know that until he was the fifth pick of the NBA draft. You know, it just did not seem like
sure.
a reasonable thing.
Sure.
You know, it just didn't seem attainable growing up in our life. But my mom and dad put a basketball in our hands since we're babies. And the first moment I knew he was really good, I would say he was going into his senior year in high school, and I was going into my senior year in college, and I was a pretty good player for our level. And I remember coming home in the summertime, he had these Doc Martin boots, was the fad back then. He had the Doc Martin boots on and a pair of jeans, and I was out in the driveway already shooting, sweating all over the place. And he came home from a buddy's house, and he wanted to play 101. And I go, sure. I've kicked his butt his whole life.
Yeah.
And I won, but it took everything I had to beat him. And I said, I'm not playing you no more, because the 101 champ is always the guy that beats you the last time.
Yeah.
So I beat him then, refused to play him again, and so I've always had the belt since. So
I love it.
He'll say he can beat me 101, but he's never proven it.
It's never happened, though. Yeah, it's never happened. It's never happened. But, yeah, that's amazing to think about, because you were a good player at Northern State. You're in college. Like, you know, the difference between being 21, 22, 23 years old and 17, 18 years old is a big deal. And the fact that you had to grind to beat him is pretty telling, you know?
Yeah, that was pretty – I remember actually going into the house right when we were done playing. And Mike was – I mean, he was talking trash. So he's my four-year younger sibling. He's talking trash and kind of taking it to me. And I had to still prove that I could beat him, and I barely did. I remember that. And I remember going into my dad's room and saying, man, I don't know what level he's going to be, Dad. But holy cow.
Yeah.
He is good. He's good. I remember telling him that. And obviously, I mean, he went on to Florida, had a great career there with the Nets championship game, helped lead a team, and then had a 17-year NBA career. So, you know, I didn't know he was going to be NBA good, because it's – It just
you never
seemed
know.
Like an unattainable goal,
right,
really.
Right, right.
We were just trying to be the best players we could possibly be. And then, you know, obviously that dream came true for him in the 2000 draft on draft night. And, I remember that very vividly.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. Everybody that knows my athletic background, you know, I was a quarterback in high school. But, you know, I believe in establishing the run game. And even more than that, I believe in establishing the Runza game. That's an original Runza cheeseburger. Some onion rings, double dipped in a homemade batter, little bit of a pop to top it off. You know, in football, you establish a run. But at lunch, you establish the Runza. It's just that simple. So get out to Runza today and establish the Runza game, or check out the delicious salads. You got the chicken bacon ranch salad, sweet berry chicken salad, and my personal favorite, the Southwest chicken salad. You got to get out to Runza, establish a Runza game, or get a salad. Either way, you are going to leave satisfied. Runza makes it all better. Tell me about you. Okay, you mentioned that your parents and put a ball in your hands at a young age. I mean, obviously, family basketball is kind of in your family's blood. I mean, when you think about you, Mike, now Mason, what did anybody in your family coach, or like what is it about basketball that's kind of infiltrated the Millers?
You know, it's just one of those deals that. My dad was a pretty good player, a small college player in South Dakota. I had uncles that were really good college players in the area, Dakota Wesleyan University in Mitchell, South Dakota. We just grew up watching them play, and we idolized them. And we thought those guys were the NBA players, to be honest with you. And it's just something that was in our family's blood. My dad was a middle school principal, and my mom was a teacher. And, you know, back then, too, there wasn't all these distractions with iPhones and video games and all that stuff.
Right.
So our distraction was – in these cold winter nights in Mitchell, South Dakota, was go to my dad's middle school and play basketball for 3-4 hours a night. And that's kind of what our deal was. And it just kind of grew, and it became who we were, you know, as part of our identity, being part of basketball and coaching basketball and playing basketball. And it just, the basketball has been very, very good for our family. It's, you know, provided me a great life, and obviously our younger brother a great life, and, you know, Mason a great opportunity to have a scholarship at Creighton. So the round thing has been very, very, yeah, very good to our family, especially coming from a location that doesn't happen very often.
No.
You know, Mitchell, South Dakota.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of getting into it with your basketball journey because it's a really interesting one. I mean, we talked about you. So you play at Northern State, and that's when you actually kind of first crossed paths with Greg McDermott. He was coaching against you when he was at Wayne State. For you, I'm always curious to ask people this. When did the coaching bug bite you? Like when you were playing at Northern State, did you know that I am going to be a coach?
Well, I always knew I was going to be associated with basketball. It was such a big part of my life. I mean, it was basically in our family is basketball, family, the Catholic Church. So that was really it. Basketball, family, Catholic Church, and education. Even though my parents were teachers, they were kind of down the list, to be honest.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So it was just such a big part of our lives growing up, okay? And I knew I'd be associated with it. I don't know if it was coaching per se. You know, I kind of got the coaching bug. I played 4 years in Northern in 98. I went overseas and played Australia a couple of years. And my brother got drafted in 2000. And he called me when I was in Australia and said, hey, man, can you help me out my first few years in the NBA? So I stopped playing. I decided to go help him and get him accustomed, try to do whatever I could to help him train him, help him grow up a little bit because he was 20 years old.
Right.
And once he got through that process, the first couple, two, 3 years, I was kind of like, I kind of like this. I kind of like having an impact, developing players and doing that. And then had an opportunity to join John Calipari's staff at Memphis as a video coordinator and on the bottom floor. And the opportunity was there. And, you know, I knew I was going to be in basketball. I knew I wanted to be a part of it. And then the career just kind of took off from there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So your first real kind of gig was with Coach Cal at Memphis. Yeah. How did you get hooked up with him?
You know, the basketball – as you go through the basketball world's pretty small.
Yeah.
And with Mike's success and getting to know people, we had a lot of similar friends. And there was just happened to be a video coordinator job opening up. At the same time, my brother got traded actually to the Grizzlies from Orlando Magic. And there's a video coordinator. And we called Craig Neal and another guy named Brett Barab at the time that knew Coach Cal really well. And then he said, yeah, come on, have him come down and meet me. I came down and met him and, you know, started, he said, yeah, you're the kind of guy we're looking for. You have a lot of experience. Your brother's playing in the NBA. You can be a good a resource for us.
Sure.
And we went from there.
You know, you look at your journey. So, you know, Memphis to Pepperdine to New Mexico to Auburn to UNLV to TCU and now to Creighton, really all over the country. I remember, so I played for Bill Self for his first 2 years at Kansas. I remember one of the first things he said to us, he says, guys, you know, with this game, the more you know, the more you're going to realize you don't know. And it's kind of like this never-ending process of kind of absorbing the game of basketball. What's that kind of been like for you? Because, I mean, you've been all over the country around all these great coaches. I'd imagine it's been wild in terms of just acquiring different nuggets of knowledge along the way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of times when I make these changes or make these moves, it is to keep developing and keep learning from other people how you do things, how they do things. And that's one of the things that drew interest coming here. I mean, we talked about the family stuff, but really what drew me here was being able to learn Coach McDermott's style and how he approaches it, how they get their success they are. Because, you know, to me it's one thing saying we want to play fast, we want to shoot a lot of threes. All the coaches say that, right?
Right.
But then – actually, when they get down to it and put it into action and how to recruit the personnel you have to recruit to have that type of success. Coach McDermott's been one of the only coaches in the country that's not only said it. He said, like, we're going to play this way, but then he's also been able to win that way and also be able to showcase talent that way, which has made it very appealing. So all these different stops, I'm just acquiring knowledge and acquiring more knowledge. I've been lucky and meeting more people and building that network because the network in college basketball and college athletics is so important, who you know and what you know too. You know, just been very, very fortunate to have been to places and being able to learn from Coach Calipari, Steve Alford,
right.
A guy, Vance Wahlberg, who was the innovator of the dribble, you know, Jamie Dixon, who was top physical play,
right.
All this stuff is just kind of inquiring, gathering this knowledge so I can help our staff here and help Coach McDermott here, but also be able to, you know, keep my progression going and developing at a high, high level.
Yeah, it's. Did you feel like? Was there a what stop in your coaching staff or in your coaching career or recruit or season or team did you feel like was kind of a turning point in your career? Like when you kind of felt like, you know what, I've kind of arrived, I got a little bit of cachet with me. Was there one recruit? Was there a team? There a turning point for you?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't know. I can't remember what year exactly it was, but it was our most successful year in New Mexico. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but that year we went 30-5 in the Mountain West Conference. We're top 10 team in the country. Recruited a kid named Darrington Hobson. Actually, Darrington played for Coach Alan Huss at Decatur Christian.
Okay.
And ended up going to junior college, but he was the Mountain West Conference Player of the Year in the Mountain West Conference when Kawhi Leonard was in the league and Jimmer Fredette was in the league, and we won the league. And so we were very, very good. I recruited the top player in the Mountain West, and I kind of, you know, you never have it all figured out. And I will say this, you never have it all figured out in this business. Never, never, never. But that was at the time I was saying, okay, I have a chance in this business.
Right, right. Yeah. I can remember even early on, and I remember talking to Coach Altman about this. Coach Altman recruited Mitch Richmond. And like the reality is we're all kind of those kinds of things change the trajectory of coaches, of head coaches, assistant coaches, all those sorts of things. So it does make a difference when you are directly tied to the Mountain West Conference Player of the Year. Your team's 30-5. Like that makes it that your Ryan Miller, the coach, changes in that moment a little bit.
Yeah, no question. I think a lot of the peers and a lot of the industry looks at you a little different. They say, okay, he can recruit. He can develop guys. He can help a team win. He knows how to be a good assistant, how to be a successful assistant, and help a team figure out ways to win games.
Hey, I want to. So let's crawl into that a little bit more with recruiting, because I want to really crawl into your brain here, and I want to start with. I feel like I'm name dropping. Like with Bill Self, he used to say, like, when I recruit a kid, I want to watch him play great. I want to watch him play good, and then I actually want to watch him play bad. So, because you can see how he reacts when he's playing bad, like, and take me into your mind with when you're recruiting a kid, intangible wise, like there might be a 16-year-old recruit listen to this thing. How much does it matter? Body language, looking at your coach, how you interact with your teammates. How much do all those things impact when Ryan Miller is sitting down to watch you play?
Yeah. Well, obviously, you said it. The first thing you look at is physical ability, size, athleticism, all that stuff. Okay, that gets you in the doorway, right?
Right.
That gets you like, okay, I'm going to take a look at this kid. Does he have the speed? Does he have the physical size? Does he have the athleticism? Does he have the skill to play at this level? That's the first thing, but it's not the most important thing. Okay, that just gets you in the doorway. After that, it's what you're talking about. And Bill Self is exactly right. How you handle adverse situations really gets you to a place like a Creighton or a place like TCU. I was just at how you handle adversity. How are things going when it's not going good for you? Are you a guy that puts his head in the sand and starts pouting with bad body language or cussing out teammates or going at your coach? Are you a guy that buckles up and gets it done? Those type of things, you know, can really make a difference between a player that and doesn't have a lot of success. And a player that gets recruited at a Big East school like Creighton and then goes on to have a lot of success at a school like Creighton.
Right.
Because there's a lot of talent out there. Game's global. The game is global. Like, it's obvious. I mean, you look at Creighton's roster right now, you got kids from Georgia, Australia, all over the country, all over the world. There's a lot of talent out there, and the things that make a difference are some of those intangible things. And the biggest thing is, like, what you talked about a little bit, how you handle adverse situations, because when you're playing at a level like this, when you're playing Villanova, you're playing St. John's, there's going to be situations that you're going to hit a lot of adversity.
Right.
There's going to be a situation where someone doesn't pass you the ball on time. There's going to be a situation when you get your butt kicked, you know, and you just got your butt kicked by Marquette, and now you got to turn around and play Villanova.
Right.
And how you can respond to those situations really determines success.
Right. I mean, it's just such a massive part of the game that I think a lot of younger kids don't really think about. But with all that said, though, Ryan, like, give me though, when you evaluate and you start looking at a kid's physical tools, let's say you're looking at a guard, you're not a point guard, just maybe a wing. What are some of the things you sit down and you really want to see in today's college game that are going to be determining factors of you wanting to continue to recruit him, assuming the intangibles are there.
Yeah, if you look at a wing, I mean, you look for size, number one. Can he – well, it all depends who you're recruiting for.
That's what I was going to say, too. It matters now. Jamie Dixon, like someone a little different than Greg McDermott, maybe.
Exactly right. It all comes down to what you look for. If I was working for Coach Dixon, or I did for the last 5 years, I'm looking for a 6'5", physical, athletic wing that can really, really guard, that can really, really play physical defense, that can get to the rim and make physical plays at the rim, right? That's what I'm looking for first. And then the intangible parts, which is more important, obviously, than some of the physical attributes that we just talked about. Second, but – if I'm coaching from Coach McDermott, and I have to sit here and learn from the staff and learn from Coach, and I just talked to Coach Lusk today because I want to get an idea of what Coach McDermott's looking for. So I'm like, you said, you never stop learning in this business, and I'm learning today, obviously, and I'm like a kid in the candy store trying to figure it all out right now. But I would say for Coach Mack and being around and watching his teams, which I watch a lot of his games, and I was involved in Mason's recruiting a little bit, so I kind of have a good idea how they play and why it works for Mason. The same kind of similarities we were talking about, why it makes sense for Mason as for some of these kids that we may be recruiting for. We're looking for someone with, you know, if we're talking about a wing, we're looking for someone that's probably 6'5", that can be able to really make shots. That's a 3-and-D type of player that can make it. If we kick ahead on a three, he can make the shot, but also if they attack him on a closeout, he can go by and rip and get to the rim and finish at the rim. Those are the type of guys we're looking for. And then someone that can obviously guard his position, guard a wing, a physical driver wing that's quite prevalent in our league and in major college basketball.
How much is the transfer portal, and now that guys can, you know, transfer and be eligible immediately, how much is that a game changer for what you guys are going to do, or do you not want to overreact to it?
It's a game changer.
Yeah.
It's a game changer, especially, you know, this year. This year is very interesting because we haven't been able to go out and recruit. So some what was hampered us a little bit and hampered every staff across the country is you can't evaluate the intangible part on a Zoom or a video or a stream on the internet. So it really makes the evaluation part hard. What doesn't make the evaluation part hard is if we played a kid at Oklahoma twice this year and we know exactly what he is. I see him every time and I scouted him out 10 times and I know exactly what type of player he is and he wants to transfer. And then I know exactly what that kid is and what he brings to the table, his experiences, a high major college basketball. I can see that. I can feel it. I've coached against it. I've, you know, seen all this stuff. So right now that 21 class has kind of got screwed a little bit.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, for no better word.
Yeah.
Because for us, it's a lot easier to evaluate during this COVID era right now, those type of guys that have those guys that you felt already, you saw physically, you saw in person, you scouted 100 times, you know. I think it'll weed its way out a little bit where those high school kids become more valuable. But we're going to have to go back on the road recruiting again.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. And I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go into Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors. By Pella, won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella windows and doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. You know, there's just, I was writing stuff down with you, and it's like you got to balance all these things. Like everybody wants to get old and stay old. You want to utilize the transfer portal. Yep. You do need high school kids for your developmental, you know, foundation. Every once in a while, you maybe got to dip into the junior college market. Like, there's a lot of different ingredients that you got to balance. And the reality is, Ryan, like, one of – if you go all in on – okay, we're going to be all high school kids. Well, that's probably not good. We're going to be all transfers. That's probably not good either. Like, there's an art to how you're piecing together a roster, too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, piecing together rosters, whether it's personnel-driven, class-driven, you know, what classes that you're recruiting or positions you're recruiting. It's like putting together a puzzle.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, no one knows how this is all going to play out. And what I admired about Coach Macklin was looking from afar a little bit. It looks like he's had the no one has the puzzle all figured out yet. But he has a lot of the pieces kind of figured out how this new age of college basketball is going to work out. Like, he understands personnel. He understands the game is changing as far as what's important on the court, like the 3-point shot, the speed and tempo you play at. And he's understanding how to put together the puzzle of a roster, which is very difficult in today's college basketballs. It's going to separate, you know, because we're going through a drastic change.
Okay? Yes.
And it's going to separate from the guys that are on the top and the guys that are going to drop down. Some of the guys that can't change, can't make the necessary changes, are going to drop down. And the people that can adapt and change to the ever-changing pieces of college athletics and college basketball are going to have the most success.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what one of the things I looked at Coach Mack, because I thought from afar, again, not being in the locker room every single day, not being in the wars every single night, that he was doing a good job and their staff was doing a good job of figuring out the pieces and what you have to do to be successful in the new age college basketball, not only what you do on the court, but how you put together personnel.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously I'm biased. I think the world of Greg McDermott. Think about it, Ryan, like this guy, and you get it, 'cause you guys lived it a little bit at TCU with the move into the Big 12, but like this guy goes from Creighton, transitions from the Missouri Valley Conference to the Big East. And during that transition, over the course of 7 years, he's built three different top 10 teams. That's a really challenging thing. So yeah. I think the way the guy's been able to piece together rosters, different kinds of rosters, is as top shelf as it gets. And you touched on it earlier in our conversation of, like, everybody says they want to play fast. Everybody says they want to give their players freedom. Everybody says they want to take a lot of threes. But, like, you got to do that with intelligence and within the framework of being unselfish. And I've been so impressed with how he's been able to wed all those different things together.
Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. I mean, as assistant coach, like you said, like a pretty high level coaches, and like you said, like everybody says that, those things.
Yeah.
We want to give our kids freedom to play. We want to play fast. But when you come down to it, have you built a roster? Have you done things necessary in practice?
Yes.
Have you done these type of things that when the game starts, that you can sit back and say, I've worked on all these things. I put together the right personnel. If they miss two quick threes with 2 seconds in the shot clock two times in a row, I'm all right with it, as long as they weren't selfish plays. They weren't selfish shots. You know, right. A lot of coaches I worked with, a lot of coaches I've coached against, they don't like that. They say a quick shot, they get a little frustrated. You know, okay, we'll live with one quick shot. Do we take the second quick shot? Then all of a sudden, they call a timeout. Like, they're going, we're taking too quick a shot.
You know? Right.
You know?
Right.
And to be able to do that, to be have the demeanor, to not be controlling, to let your kids have the freedom, but also, you know, it's even before that. It's like, coach, you have to recruit the right personnel. You have to understand, identify talent, the right talent that you're recruiting towards your system. And then you have to work every day to get all these kids to have those types of freedoms, and then be all right, not micromanage the game, to let them take these shots because you've worked on it and you have a lot of confidence in the system and who you recruited to be able to go make those plays.
Yeah.
Like you said, everybody says it. Everybody says, we're going to play fast. We're going to let our kids play. We're going to shoot a ton of threes, but not a lot of coaches actually put it in play.
Totally, completely agree. And, you know, Ryan, I'd imagine when you're sitting in front of and on the phone with kids, like when you're – In no particular order, I'd imagine what's high on priority list for recruits is the conference that you're playing in, you want to play for a winner, style of play, fan support, and then you know how it is, a lot of kids have pro aspirations. What kind of pros have you produced?
Sure.
I mean, Creighton checks a lot of those boxes, right?
Yes.
Like I would think this is a pretty exciting program for you to go out there and sell to recruits.
No, I mean, the same reason. I left it. Unbelievable. I was assistant head coach in the Big 12, working with one of the best coaches in the country. We had good success, not great success. We, you know, their last NCAA tournament before we got there was 1998. So we're part of a turnaround. We put a kid in the NBA. So a lot of things were going good. But like you said, for me to come here is the same things I tell the kids right now that were recruiting here for Creighton. I said, I came here for same reasons that you should come here. the platform that we're allowed, the success, the Sweet 16 success they've had, the three top 10 teams that Coach McDermott's coached, the NBA kids that are coming out of here, the 17,000 fans that are at the arena every night, the amazing platform we're going to have in the Big East. All those same things, reasons I'm coming here. The style of play is very conducive. I want to learn from Coach Mack. I don't have all this. I know how they play, but I want to learn more about how he puts it in action. Because like we talked about, I keep referring to it, but it's so important, is all the coaches say they want to do it.
Right.
He's about the only coach in the country that really does it at a high level.
Yeah.
I mean, so I want to take it in. The same reasons why you should come here is the same reasons I came here, and the same reasons my brother, Mike, who's a 17-year NBA vet, said Mason Miller needs to play at Creighton.
Right. Right. No, you're exactly right. You know, and it's, by the way, I got to assume you were obviously on the staff when you guys beat Creighton in the NIT were you there?
I was on two staffs in New Mexico that beat Creighton. Oh yeah. I've been on three staffs. My fault. We beat Creighton in NIT a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I'm trying to remember.
I was on the staff, and then we played Creighton twice with Dana Altman.
Yes.
When I was in New Mexico.
Yeah, I just wondered if, like, the first taste of, you know, being able to see Creighton at TCU a couple of years ago probably helped, too. Like, it's one thing to watch them on TV casually when you're sitting on your couch before you go to bed, but it's another thing to have to, like, study film and get prepared for them and go, man, this – man, what they do with ball screens, what they do with lobs to the rim, what they do in transition, this is really good.
No, it's really good. And we got fortunate because we played a very young team back then. That was kind of their building team for this last past 2 years. But, it was good to see in action. It was good to scout against. Again, I've always been a fan and style of how they've done it and how they play, you know. But when you see an action like that, you know, I was referring to my time in New Mexico because we came here. I don't know what year it was, but we had a pretty good team that year. And it was the Dana Altman team, but I was just referring to the fans.
Right.
We had like a 16-point halftime lead,
yes.
A 14-point halftime lead. And P. Allen's didn't went off the second half. they came back. But all I can remember, the biggest thing I can remember is the fans.
Right.
The fans in that place were so loud while they were making their comeback to beat us. It was all forever ingrained in my mind how this place is loud. This place is crazy. I couldn't believe how crazy it was, really. And I've been at crazy places.
The Dick Bob Podcast is brought to you by White Castle Roofing. White Castle can handle everything from replacements to repairs. And a White Castle Roofing expert can come out to your home and give you an honest assessment of your roof, even if that means nothing needs to be done. One of the best decisions I've made is to go with White Castle Roofing when my roof had some hail damage back in Omaha. And listen, when it comes to your roof, you don't want to mess around. You need people you can trust, and trust me, you can trust White Castle Roofing. When I had some hail damage, working with White Castle was smooth, it was easy, and most importantly, it was done right. If you're like me, way out of my element with this stuff. So I need people that communicate every step of the way from start to finish. White Castle did just that. They're all about quality. They're all about craftsmanship. The crews are knowledgeable. They care about the details. And cleanup is a top priority. And when it's all finished, the roof looks great. It's going to last for years. So whether it's for your home or your business, make the smart move and go with White Castle Roofing. Check them out, whitecastleroofing.com. That's whitecastleroofing.com. White Castle Roofing, built with trust, proven by time. Yeah, I mean, the pit gets rocking, man. I mean, it's a really good place to play. We'll get you out of here. Get you out of here here in a couple of questions. I'll let you run. I was reading it. So it's interesting how Greg McDermott, he changed this a couple of years ago where he legitimately has like defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators with how he divides things up for the staff. It looks like you're going to be more hands-on with the defense.
Yep. Paul was kind of like that.
Yep.
And so, Coach McDermott's very big on having a defensive coach, kind of like football does.
Yep.
Defensive coach and offensive coach. I was on the staff at UNLV that did that way.
Okay.
Dave Wright, when I was at UNLV, but I was on the offensive side of it. But I've done both. So both through scouting reports too. When you do scouting reports, like for Coach Dixon, for example, when we're scouting out Baylor, we're putting together defensive and offensive plans. He wants one guy concentrating on one side of the ball, which I kind of like. And we'll concentrate on one side of the ball. We'll put together the best defensive plans. Talking to Coach Mack, the defensive philosophy, obviously we're going to kind of inherit is,
yeah,
you know, bend, don't break style.
Right.
Whatever you do, don't give up open threes. Don't give up open layups. Force the team into much mid-range. Kind of go back to that offensive analytics, trying to force as many mid-range twos, contest the mid-range dribble twos we can. And, you know, throw in a couple of zones to change the pace and make it pretty exciting, make it pretty, you know, bend, don't break style so we can get out and run offensively and make plays offensively.
Yeah, that's it. It's, you know, it's good. It's, I mean, obviously there's a million different ways to do it, but it's nice where, you know, like when I played in college, you could tell when one assistant had the scout and maybe the other two assistants are kind of checked out for that, for mm-hmm. practice, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like when everybody's
exactly
involved.
Exactly right. And I totally agree with that. I'm
yes.
like, yeah, I can, it's just, by human nature, I catch myself doing a
right.
little bit too. I mean, you know, Baylor, who was my scout, I was fully engaged. I knew the whole offense and defensive game plan. I know, you know, where, you know, they called a play, Baylor called a play. I knew exactly what they're going to run.
Right.
When I was off it, I'm just kind of human nature. When we played Oklahoma State, I was like, you know, I was still engaged, but
right.
you were like not knowing the nuances of
it's
the
just
game,
different.
What's going on, the
right.
play calls. Should we play off? Should we play man or deep or zone? Should we? How should we attack them offensively? So you kind of just like checked out. You know, the one thing being in the league for 5 years that changed a little bit. I was in the league, Big 12. We didn't have a lot of coaching turnover.
Right.
That I knew all the teams really, really well.
Right.
Now I'm gonna have to relearn the teams, but after 5 years, I knew the teams really, really well. So even me being checked out a little bit, I was really checked in still at a high level just because of my history of coaching against a Lon Cruz team. Like, and you know, we play everybody twice in that league, like the Big East. So we'd play Oklahoma like two, maybe three times a year. So you had a really good idea of what they're trying to do offensively and defensively. I'm gonna have to go through the tapes like crazy to try to figure out the league a little bit. Here coming to being the new guy in the league.
At least you got Shaka. You'll be in charge of the Marquette
Shaka.
Scout.
I do know I've gone against him a lot, so I know exactly what they're trying to do.
I love it. Ryan Miller, hey man, I kept you a little longer than I said I would, but this was great. I just I've been looking forward to picking your brain. You got an amazing track record and resume. I speak for everybody in the Creighton basketball world. Everybody's really excited that you're here. Congratulations and thank you for taking out some time.
Well, we're excited about it. We're excited about being a part of the community, but being part of the staff here and just being part of the Creighton basketball family. So I appreciate it, Nick.
You got it. Thanks, Ryan. All right, my thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet, great burgers, cheese Runza, delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
A Huda Media Production.